counter rings, now I can. Where you were, where I'm standing, chase your life with my hands, count your rings. All your records we can spin. All the history hidden in, it all begins with your rings. See the light, you grew faster every spring, see the dark, slow summer wood the late season would bring. Strange for the sun to warm my head, where I'm used to shade and branches, where the birds first had the chance to use their wings. Every nest in your canopy, every picnic at your feet, filled the air with something sweet, so we should sing. We all loved your tree. We will miss your tree. There's no mystery to your age, now we can see. Reading of flood and fire in your diary. A year without summer back in 1816. A history written straight into cambium and published by the falling of a tree. I've got something big to say, welling in my heart today, so I will stand upon the place you used to be. May I draw upon the height, how you towered at the sight, upon the grandeur, the sublime nobility. We all loved your tree. We will miss your tree. We all loved your tree. We will miss your tree.
That was Molly Ledford and Billy Kelly from a release all about trees called Count Your Rings. And over the break, you heard Ketsa, and the old oak tree was Kid Kaleidoscope way back when. On the show today with us is Dr. Peter M. Brown. He is a dendrochronologist, and we have made a learning guide to go with this show. You can find it at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode called Dating Trees. And dendrochronology is the science that studies climate and so much more just by learning about trees, and specifically tree rings.
Why did you want to have this job?
That's a good question. I've just been interested. So I actually started out my career as an archaeologist. And archaeologists, as I mentioned, use tree rings to find the ages of old buildings. And again, the idea is that someone has cut a tree down to use in the construction of their village. And so by using the dendrochronology, we can find the age when that tree was cut down, and that gives us the age of that village.
Wow, that is really, really amazing. But how do you know that something was cut down, like by the actual date so precisely, like 1820 or something? How do you know that just by looking at the rings? I mean, you're saying you're taking a tree ring sample out of like a beam in a building, and you're able to date exactly when that tree was cut down. But how?
It's this process that we call cross-dating. And the idea is, because coming back to the fact that climate is controlling the growth of the trees, remember that a dry year is going to produce a narrow ring. Well, it's going to produce a narrow ring for all of the trees in an area. So we match the patterns of wide and narrow rings. First, we have to start with living trees. As I mentioned, we go out using these increment borers, sample living trees, work our way backwards and build basically what we call a chronology or a catalog of the ring patterns. Then we can go to something like an old timber from that someone used in the construction of their village, and we can then cross-date or cross-match these patterns of wide and narrow rings with our living tree chronology, find where it matches and say, ah, well, this tree was cut in, you know, in 1836 or in some cases back in the 1200s, 1276.
That's just amazing.
It's kind of similar to your question, but how do you know how old the tree is? Because if you see all the rings and if they have like over 1,000, how do you count them all? You can't just count them like 1, 2, 3 because you might lose track.
You pretty much hit it right there. We just count backwards. To be a good dendrochronologist, you really just have to know how to count backwards from 10. We put a dot on the tree rings at every decade. So every 10 years. So at 2010, at 2000, at 1990, and so on. So we just count backwards and we just keep track of, you know, where we are. And again, we can measure the tree rings so that we know how wide, say, 1990 was compared to 1991. And so on. But this is this process of cross-dating. And again, it's because climate is controlling the growth of the trees that we can match these patterns up.
You talked about how we can find out the age and what a tree was like and how old it is from hundreds of years ago. But what about even further back? Can tree rings fossilize? And if so, can we tell what the environment was like maybe millions of years ago?
That's a great question, Amadeus. So you've already learned that the oldest living tree that we've got out there is this Methuselah that goes back almost 5,000 years. But there's lots of dead wood in this area where Methuselah is growing. And we can, by matching the patterns up with the Methuselah and other living trees, we can go back into time. So actually the longest chronologies that we have around the world are around 10,000 years old using dead wood. But that's a great question about going back, you know, millions of years. Certainly, we have fossil wood. We find fossil wood all over the place, basically, that people, you know, where it's turned to stone. In many cases, you can see tree rings in that fossil wood. Now, we can use the dendrochronology to find the date of that wood. That's found by the ages of those pieces of wood are found by other types of geological processes that people use. But we can look at the past climate, you know, how variable the climate was, how fast the trees were growing. Those kinds of questions we can ask using that fossil wood. So there is studies, quite a bit of studies, that have used fossil trees for that purpose.
So you're saying that petrified wood, which, you know, is like it looks like a rock for all practical purposes, except it looks like a chunk of a tree that turned into a rock. You can actually learn a lot about that particular tree's life, even though it's become a rock, because the tree rings really did get preserved.
Exactly. You know, in some cases, you can look at even things like the cell sizes in those trees and compare those to modern trees. But we can look at the variability. Is it similar or different from modern trees? Are they growing fast? Are they not? Even such things as we found evidence of fire, past fires. So we know, say, 40 million years ago, there were still forest fires out there just as there are today.
Fascinating. Dr. Peter M. Brown is a dendrochronologist. We're going to come back with a whole lot more on dendrochronology. You can find a learning guide with this episode at childrenshour.org. This next one is the Okie Dokie Brothers.
In the backwoods of an old mighty forest, there's a silver maple tree standing by a brook. Branches are reaching out to hug you, and the older she gets, the more beautiful she looks. She's tall and she's wide, she's welcoming and wise. She's the great-grandmother tree that never dies. She put roots down in the river valley, friends with the bugs and the birds and the plants. She was always branching out, ever changing. And even when she got old, she loved to dance. She's tall and she's wide, she's welcoming and wise. She's the great-grandmother tree that never dies. But a storm blew in one midwinter evening, and it shook the old tree from side to side. The heavy snow fell and the wind blew her over. In the morning, the grandmother tree had died. In the backwoods of an old mighty forest, there's a silver maple tree lying on her side. She's home to all kinds of life now. She doesn't live, but she's still alive. She's tall and she's wide, she's welcoming and wise. She's the great-grandmother tree that never dies. She's the great-grandmother tree that never dies.
Make way for me, I'm a little seed. Shine a light, light is what I need. To grow and grow up from below. Love is like the sun in the sky. Make way for me, I'm a little tree. Shine your light, light is what I need. To grow and grow up from above. Love is like the sun in the sky. And we all know, helps us grow. Make way for me, I'm a little seed. Shine your light, light is what I need.
That's Levity Beat out of New Zealand. You're listening to the Children's Hour. We're learning about dendrochronology with Dr. Peter M. Brown from Rocky Mountain Tree Ring Research.
What is the oldest tree that you have found?
So have you guys heard of giant sequoia? They grow in the Sierra Nevada in California. Wherever you are in your offices, in your kitchen, in your bedroom, look over at the wall to your left and the wall to your right. That's probably about 12, 14 feet maybe. That's half of the size of some of the biggest giant sequoia. They can be 20 to 25 feet in diameter.
You mean like from one side of the tree trunk to the other side of the tree trunk? You're saying that the diameter of a sequoia would essentially fill the rooms we're sitting in right now?
Exactly. And twice the size of the rooms that you're probably sitting in.
When you showed us your tree borer, it's not possibly long enough to go all the way through that.
The longest borers we have are about 20 inches. So no, we can't sample the age of those trees. Unfortunately, the giant sequoia were heavily cut down for timber in the late 1800s, early 1900s, before people kind of got the picture that, hey, these are some special trees and we really should protect them. Right now, they're all protected in national parks or national forests. But back in the past, they did cut them down. And what we can do is actually go to the tops of the stumps. The stumps are still out there. And we can then take a chainsaw and we can sample a radius that way. So we can find the ages of some of those old trees. So those are the oldest trees I've sampled. There are big trees. They don't get as old as the bristlecone pine, but they do get up to over 2,000, even over 3,000 years old.
Can you see past human activity from the imperfections in the tree's rings?
That's a great question. In some cases, we can see things like injuries that are caused by, for example, one of the things we find a lot of times are what are called fire scars. These are areas where fire has injured the tree but not killed the tree. And in many cases, those fires are started by people. So in some cases, it's lightning, obviously, that starts fires. But other times we see, and particularly this is one thing that foresters like, is where people have come in and done thinning in a forest. So you have a very dense stand of trees. All of those trees are competing for water and light and nutrients. Well, you remove some of those trees, and then the surviving trees, they will grow much faster. So foresters are doing that all the time. And we see that in the rings, what we call a growth release, where the rings are fairly narrow, and all of a sudden they get very wide.
So it is said that like each kind of tree can have a typical lifespan. Some trees generally live for like 75 years, while others can live for hundreds. So what makes some trees have the ability to live much longer than others?
So one thing about trees is that they are what we call modular organisms. They're not like us that are unitary organisms. When we're born, we got, our heart, our lungs, our kidneys, all of our parts are there. And as we age, everything just sort of gets older and falls apart. Well, a tree, think about it, is putting on every year, it's putting on a new ring, it's putting on new leaves, it's putting on new bark, it's putting on new roots. So there's sort of a question, and this is kind of, we've had a little bit of a discussion in the scientific literature about this, is how long could a tree live? Could it live forever? I always think trees don't die, they're killed by something. They're killed by drought, they're killed by fire, they're killed by insects, they're killed by humans. We cut them down. So that's a great question you ask, because some species do tend to have a lot more diseases, a lot more impacts from, if they're growing in a stand of trees, a forest of trees, there's a lot more things that can get transmitted between them. For example, if there's fungal infections or insect outbreaks. So those will tend to kill trees faster. Fire. Obviously, if a fire is going through a stand, a denser stand, it's going to kill all the trees in the stand, and the new forest has to come up at that point. Whereas trees like bristlecone growing way up in the mountains, very poor soils, they don't have any grass or understory around them, the trees are widely spaced, those guys then, they're more alone, if you will, and there's not that much that can kill them relative to a more closed forest.
What a feeling to be next to a tree that is so ancient.
Oh, I tell you guys, in Yosemite National Park or Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park, if you ever get a chance, definitely go up there. Those trees are incredible. They're magnificent.
We are speaking with Dr. Peter M. Brown. He is a dendrochronologist. He's a scientist who studies tree rings to better understand trees themselves, as well as the world around us and our climate. Dr. Brown, thank you so much for being with us on the Children's Hour today.
Thank you all for the invitation.
We've got a lot of links posted about Dr. Brown's work at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Dating Trees, where you'll also find the learning guide. Lots more coming up. Stick with us.
You're listening to The Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
The Children's Hour is now producing weekly educational modules to go with every episode, thanks to a grant from the Albuquerque Community Foundation. You can support this effort too. Go to childrenshour.org and click donate. The Children's Hour is grateful to the Outpost Performance Space in Albuquerque, New Mexico, for hosting our recordings. Many thanks to New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and the National Endowment for the Arts for their support of the Children's Hour. The Children's Hour is grateful to the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund for their support.